it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Welcome to Out of the Blue from the Block M Podcast Network, part of the Fan First Sports Network, the podcast that caused that ship to run aground in the Suez Canal a few years back, disrupting supply chains everywhere. We are sorry about that. I am Jared Stormer of the Block M Podcast Network. With me, as always, is Andy Bailey, my hetero life mate. Andy Bailey, who, after being Mickey Rourke's stunt double in the late 80s, was sold to us by a Middle Eastern sheikh and will be working for us until he pays off his debt to Saladin bin Saban. Good to have you, my friend. Good to see you again. How the hell are you?
Good to be back, man. 2 weeks off, you know, got to recharge, settle in, dive into some combine, some football, some basketball. Not so much some basketball, some hockey. Yeah. And good to be back talking with you.
It is outstanding to get to catch up with you, my friend. We got a lot to catch up on, despite the fact that basketball probably going to be maybe glanced over in this one. But there's a lot going on. I am currently abroad, across the pond, as they say, down in South America. So coming to you from a different country. But that's not going to stop us. This is what we are here to do. We are put on this God's green earth to drink some light beers and talk about Michigan sports. And that's what we plan to do, my friend. So let's get you caught up, get you in the know. Let's start with some of the football news. Now, none of this should come as too big of a surprise, just some finalizations of hires that we've already discussed on this podcast. And that's going to be the official hiring of Greg Scruggs and of Wink Martindale, as well as the additions of some defensive analysis. That's going to be Kevin Wilkins and then Brad Hawkins joining the team as a graduate assistant. So we've already talked about Scruggs coming from Cincinnati, the Jets, and most recently Wisconsin, replacing Mike Elston. You wrote an awesome piece, one of my favorites, that I read on your couch drinking your coffee, by the way, about Wink Martindale, and really talked me back into that. So what are you thinking about these hires? Which ones got you the most excited? And maybe who's somebody under the radar that we should be watching a little bit more?
Martindale's got me excited for the short term. just because I talked about that article, just some of the exciting things. It's going to be fun to watch. Like, the personnel's built in. I don't think he's there for the long haul. I think it could be a really exciting season with what they're going to do with pressures and coverages. But Scruggs for the long haul. I really like this guy, especially on the recruiting trail. I think he was a good defensive line coach. I think he's an excellent recruiter. And I think having a year with some good defensive minds in the room to learn from, I think this could be a nice investment for the future. So really excited for Scruggs. In terms of the analysts, like, haven't dove in too much to what they're bringing to the table, but I just like having some veteran presences in the room. And that's really what you want to see from the analyst role, someone that can recognize stuff and recognize trends and some macro things going on with other teams, because that's really their primary role, is to prepare you for what other teams are doing. So I don't know who's going to be the Ohio State guy, who's going to be looking at this team, but I like having people with a lot of football experience.
I'm with you on that one. Last winter, when asked about his recruiting philosophy, Scruggs said, and I quote, "When I say I ain't playing, I ain't playing." And end quote. Say less, Scruggs. I'm in. I don't even really, that is very vague. Doesn't matter. I'm in.
It doesn't matter in the fact that the NCAA also announced while we were off that they're not investigating NIL-related issues for the time being. They put a freeze on it, like, it's like, is this the purge? Like, for a while, for next 2 weeks, this is not illegal. Go ahead. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I mean, they gave Keon Sab like a submarine and a chest full of doubloons. So they're like, all right, you know what? Maybe we should just leave it, this be.
Gave him the bones of Ian Bunting.
Those are the crown jewels from London? How did you get those? You're a safety. Yeah, it's ridiculous. What are we doing here? I'm excited, man, too. Brad Hawkins, getting him back on the team. I think that's tremendous, man. That is fun. The guy could still play. Like, Hawkins is still a young guy. So obviously somebody that's going to connect. Excited to see what his career could become. And, you know, these guys like Jordan Kovacs and Grant Newsom, this is where you start. This is how you get your start. I mean, what's the name, the guy at Ohio State whose name escapes me because we don't cover Ohio State, who was their former wide receiver, now offensive coordinator.
Brian Hartline.
Yeah, Hartline. Like, this is how you get your start. So I'll be fascinated to watch Hawkins' career. We used to compete for women. That was Diamante. That was Diamante. We used to compete for women out in Denver. Had the same girl. We were both fighting for it. And I was like, well, I never played safety, so he's got me there.
We just need like a full episode dedicated to you and Demonte Thomas hitting on women in bars.
Yeah, no. We what's that, next week? We got time. We're peak
right
off
before
season,
the spring maybe. Draft, of course.
Let's go right before the you know the order of things. On Martindale, real quick. Like I said, I read your article and I had a thought that I was waiting till this podcast to say, because initially you were not super into Martindale until you did the deep dive. You called him NFL Don Brown. And that's kind of what I was thinking too, but I had a very surface level opinion of this. I had not done the deep dive whatsoever. And it got me thinking something about this Tampa defense that we've seen. It's like the Tampa 2, the accelerated version that the Ravens run that's now taken over in all of football right now. Is it more exotic blitzes or is it more personnel? Because Don Brown ran some very exotic blitzes and Wink Martindale runs some very exotic blitzes. But the difference is, I think, the personnel, or is it a combination, which is a little bit of a sellout answer?
It's the sellout answer, just because Martindale will do exotic blitzes, but he'll mix in weird zones, like zones you don't see. That'll take out a few windows. He'll drop guys that aren't supposed to be dropped. He's not afraid to break the rules as much, where I feel like Don Brown was putting the square peg in the hole no matter what shape it was. He was going to pound it in there no matter what happened. Now, Martindale can be stubborn as well with some of his secondary personnel. And like when you have Will Johnson, you're blessed with not having to worry about that. But you saw it with the Giants and some things he would do, and it would be back and forth. But like, I feel like, no matter what, even when his defenses struggle, they're at least really good at something. And that most of the time is setting up the offense. Like last season with the Giants, they led the league in turnovers. Like, so they're setting that team up to do something with the football. But when Don Brown's got bad, like to the bottom of like 2020, which would be the equivalent in this analogy of Wink Martindale last year with the Giants, they weren't good at anything. They couldn't stop a nosebleed. So it's like Martindale has just been around more football, just a little more creative in terms of certain things he's going to do, and has experience at the highest level doing it. With Brown, we saw him have some success here at a high level, but once the gimmick wore off, the magic never returned.
Right. And I can't imagine Wink Martindale having the rigidity to only be playing like a certain type of coverage and only be playing man to man and refuse to do any type of zone or mix it up whatsoever.
No. Whereas
Don Brown's ultimate demise there. I agree. 100%. Just something that I kind of wanted to bring up. And on top of it, like, Martindale looks like a good hang. Looks like he works the equipment rental desk at a Home Depot in Peoria. Man, looks like the chairman of a pastrami sandwich committee. Should be the face of Busch Light. Like, I'm in. Let's hang out. Let's fix your snowblower.
No, I love that. People have called him the blitzing mullet, called him a bunch of different things. I like that he rocks the chain at all times. I respect that. One of the things that really, like, kind of brought me back around, or at least sparked it, was I was listening to the New Heights podcast, which is Jason and Travis Kelce's podcast. And Jason Kelce is raving about Wink Martindale. Like, nice. You know, it's going to be confusing. And Jason Kelce, who is the best center of all time, is coached by one of the best offensive line coaches of all time in a great cohesive veteran unit, still struggled to recognize blitzers and discover things. And it's like, if he is struggling, then what is this person doing? That's a sophomore chem major across the line. Like, it's a completely different game. And to be at that level, I think coming down to Michigan at times, it's going to feel like a complete mismatch, not even fair with what he's going to do with some of these looks.
Give me two players on next year's defense that you think really benefit from this hire.
Oh, number one is Josiah Stewart. Josiah Stewart is going to have, I think, a rock star season. And I think Jayshon Barnham, the Maryland transfer linebacker, I think is also going to have an electric season. Like Elvis Dumervil, who we comped Josiah Stewart one time too, just because of the size, the bend, the power, is one of Wink Martindale's greatest success stories. He credits Martindale with so much of his success and usage and what he did. And I think you're going to see the similar thing next year. And in terms of Barnham, how athletic he is, I think he's just going to be a chess piece out there. And his blitzing capabilities already, like, we're going to see him just shooting shooting A gaps, B gaps, stunting, just blitzing several times a game, similar to Devin Bush, if you will, in like 2017. That's how he's going to kind of be used.
I love that. And Derek Moore with just a couple added pounds.
Like, oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that is a large, large human. And he could do some, like, interesting Chris Jenkins-esque type things at that size. So, like, he's going to be a valuable piece in this as well. So, I think
the defense is stacked. Like,
it is, man. It is. And, like, I've talked to myself, and I don't think that it's us talking ourselves into Martindale. It really makes sense because you and I, like, had kind of worked ourselves towards this once we lost all that we lost on this defensive staff. We're like, we need an adult in the room. Like, yeah, we really do. And I think that piece of it, and then also your deep dive, like, really kind of sold me on this. And the personnel we have that are going to fit this like a glove. You already have your number one cornerback, so that's going to give you a ton of options right there. You are stout in the back end. And, oh, yeah, Mason Graham exists. So, like,
you can keep the verbiage the same. It's the Ravens defense. They've been running since 21. It's pretty much the master of it all coming in. Like, this is a short-term rental. I'll be shocked if he's there next year and on the road recruiting. But, like, I think this is a big service to, like, the seniors and the veterans on this defense. Like, letting them, like, understand, you don't have to relearn anything. Like, you're going to be stars in this role. We're going to have a lot of fun in this. And like you said, man, we could put a lot of people in charge of this defense and it's going to be successful, but having that adult in the room, the guy that has the familiarity with the scheme and everything, I think it's honestly one of the best moves they could have made.
Yeah. And look, I mean, this isn't a rebuilding year in their eyes. Try and tell Will Johnson, like, we're taking a year off. No, they're gunning for the playoffs. They at least want a top 12 spot. And for them, they're probably thinking a top 4 spot and a bye.
Dude, I love it. I love this. It's awesome that, like, they're already getting counted out. Like, you're worried about motivation. Everyone's counting them out. Everyone is legit and doing it, not just like fake Nolan Smith, Georgia, everybody counted us out. Everyone is piling on, like, Michigan's down. They're going to be bad. They're going to lose 4 or 5 games. They're going to struggle here. Keep it coming. Keep it coming, because defense and running the football still wins games.
Bet. You think we're winning? You think we're losing 5 games next year? That is preposterous. Like, it would require injuries to Will Johnson, Donovan Edwards, most of the offensive line, Mason Grant. Like, it requires a bus crash.
And this team still isn't done adding. Just wait until the additions coming in the spring. Just wait on it. There are more coming. Like, there's going to be some more shakeups, like, coming down the pike. But no, this team is, it's going to be fun. It's so there's so many similarities to the 17 team, except the 17 team, the 2017 team had one starter coming back on defense, and we have just a nuclear missile of the defense coming back next year.
Very excited, man. Can't wait to actually start talking about some positions and players. And look, we got an offseason, baby, but it's really not that far away. We got a spring game coming up in a month, you know?
Yeah. These
things, it's going to go fast. It's going to go fast. All right. I need to huff some gasoline real quick, or maybe take some peyote. We got to talk about basketball for 30 seconds here. Here's what's going on. We are bad. You all know that. breaking news, but there was a report that came out from Michigan basketball. John Sanderson, strength and conditioning coach, who actually came from Ohio State way back when, has resigned. And an email, I don't know if it was released or if it was leaked, but regardless, the email's out there of his resignation and why he resigned and of the incident that we kind of heard about behind closed doors. Essentially, it sounds like there was an altercation between Jace Howard and another strength coach of some kind, not Sanderson. Sanderson stepped in and told Jace Howard to be respectful. After that, Juwan Howard tried to fight him. And I mean, this is allegedly.
Yeah.
This is Sanderson's view. We haven't heard Howard's take on this yet. But yeah, it sounds like all the players had to hold him back. I am inclined to believe this based on, you know, history and what we've seen with Juwan Howard. The man clearly is very passionate, but I also don't think he can control his emotions. Additionally, worth mentioning here that written into Juwan Howard, I don't know if it's into his contract, but there is a policy in place coming from the top that there is zero tolerance for any type of physical altercations after the incident with Wisconsin. I don't really know what happened. Obviously, neither do you, but what's your take on this and what do you think happened?
Just it's complete dysfunction. Like, and I think in cases like this, it starts top down. Like there's just no accountability. It's just the losing obviously compounds and multiplies everything, but it just seems like a disaster right now. And I don't know how you're going to get it corrected with the same people that, you know, sparked the disaster and exacerbated all the issues and still in place. Like, this team has one away win this season, has lost 7 games in a row, and is 8-22. I mean, Doug McDaniel was basically on house arrest and couldn't play road games because he wasn't hitting the books hard enough. Like, it all this stuff just keeps adding up. We're all just like, yeah, you know, it's another day. Like, Juwan Howard's fighting strength coaches, but it's fine. There's zero tolerance policy, but like, it doesn't really apply to him. Just everything together, man. It's just such a bad look. The program is in such disarray. I can't even think of when it felt so bleak surrounding the basketball program.
This is like when Jordan Poole winning that ring with the Warriors has ruined him as a player. He's like, I'm good. I'm set. My legacy is there. It's like Rami Malek winning an Academy Award when he's not that good of an actor. And it's just like, no, I am. See what I've done here. And it's like, no, that's a fluke. It shouldn't have happened. The national championship, not a fluke, has draped this blanket over Juwan Howard and Ward Manuel, this blanket of protection, or maybe we're all just fine ignoring it. But like, here at this podcast where we're, you know, it's our job to kind of look into these things. Dysfunction seems like you're underselling it. John Beilein, when after a 30-point loss was asked about it, said, I have no comment. Seemed absolutely dejected. The fact that like he would even say, I have no comment rather than like offer some type of support. It goes to show that like, I think he sees it like we all see it. This is an absolute tire fire. This is a circus tent that has caught a flame, and there are clowns and elephants and spectators sprinting to the exits. It is asinine. I cannot believe. And Ward Manuel offered his support of this circus tent fire. It's madness.
And Jim Harbaugh just, you know, gets made to look the villain even after like 2 years of winning the Big Ten championship and everything else going on and all the phony stories come out like, hey, now the NFL may not offer safe harbor to him. You know, he stealing signs. I mean,
you and I were so on that as bullshit the second we heard that.
The second it dropped, we were laughing okay, I have lost all respect for any like semblance of integrity in reporting because this is just ridiculous. So stupid. But again, nope, can't do anything with Jim. Nope, nothing there. And now, but with Juwan Howard, like, I understand he's a prominent alum, but like, after that, he can't come back. Like, things are just get things are just getting worse. Like, this was the year he had to turn it around.
Yeah.
Spiraling.
And, it's a spiral. And some basketball minds that I respect have said, like, give him some grace because of the situation with the heart surgery, which, you know, I will take into account. You're absolutely right. But we got worse when he came back. There looked to be, like, you and I were kind of excited in, like, the first four games. We're like, this is a little fun with Martelli. We're like, there's some interesting pieces here. I don't think they're going to do anything, but, like, could we get to 18 wins? Oh, my goodness, we barely got to eight. And I just don't know, man. Yeah, I don't think you can bring him back. I do think, though, that we have an out here. I really think if you just go to one of the games and start some shit with him, he will fight you on camera. Like, if anyone listening to this, if you've got a ticket to the game, just call his son like a punk or something, and he will run into the stands and malice in the palace you. And then problem solved. We can go get whoever's out there. Like, just bring Beeline back or promote Martelli. I don't care how old they are. They are combined 214. I don't care.
In this seven-game losing streak, only one loss is by single digits, and it was by eight. The other losses are by 23, 30, 14, 10. Oh, here's a good one. 29, 20. Like, these aren't close losses. I don't understand how this is the product they're putting out there. And it's like, hey, you know, we got to support. Like, I understand, like Ward Manuel's not going to come out and be like, I know, man, we straight up suck ass. Like, we are in trouble. But, like, he has no good history, no goodwill with how he's handling it. No one trusts him. He can't be asked to come back. Like, no. I get it. He had some heart issues. That's fine. But, like, I can't come into work and be like, well, my leg hurts. That's why I'm acting like such a jerk at work today. So I tried to fight Kevin over the copier. Like, it's so bad. I mean, I don't see any path. There's not a JJ McCarthy or in a class coming in to help the program. No. There's not going to be big changes out there. Like, you and I talked, like you said, beginning of the year with Martelli, there was some optimism. Like, they were running, gunning the St. John's game, especially. Man, this team has something. And then when Juwan Howard came back, it was like the teacher came back and the sub had to leave. And it's like it sucked all year out of the room. No one wanted to engage, and the team just completely flatlined since.
Yeah, it was like the Robin Williams from the Dead Poets Society. Wasn't he a substitute in that? It's been a couple of years since I watched that. But, like, that was clearly the guy that should have been leading the class. Like, no question about it. It should be Martelli. Like, you need somebody that knows what they're doing. And, like, look, I'm surprised Ward doesn't have heart issues. What is he doing? Because he's not being an athletic director. I assume he's just, like, trying to see how many Costco hot dogs he can eat in a single day. Like, And he's out there, like, offering his support of this product. How can you do that as the athletic director when this is going to be – it's going to go down as – I don't have it in front of me, but maybe the all-time worst season in Michigan basketball history. There were some rough ones there after the NCAA hammer came down, after the Fab Five stuff. So, I mean, there might have been something, some bleak periods in there. But since you and I have been watching and covering, 100% the worst season. Since my memory goes back, this is the worst season I can remember.
So you would have, so right now with eight wins, so let's just, you know, just to be conservative, let's say they're not going to win anymore because it's probably not going to happen. You would have to go back to, still scrolling. I am at 1988, 1981. The team went 7-20.
Ah, in the heart of the Cold War.
Yeah. And then to go back, like, you'd have to go back to 66, 67 when they only played 24 games and that team was 8-16. But in terms of, like, winning percentage, like, it's on track to be, like, one of the worst ever.
Well, it does go ahead and solidify the fact that the state of Michigan traded football for basketball this year, because combined the Pistons and the Wolverines are going to have the worst year for basketball in the state of Michigan, coming off of what we just saw with the national championship and one game shy of the Super Bowl for the Lions. But yeah, it's bad, man. And if Howard comes back next year, like, you and I kind of have to watch a little bit. We don't have to be dialed in, though. But, like, what's your leash going to be next year? What is your, like, are you going to have any desire to want to tune back in, knowing likely that this product is going to be really bad?
Absolutely not. I barely have the desire to, like, force myself now. Like, I watch basically the first half and then 5 minutes of the second, then Michigan's down by 20, and I just carry on about my day. Like, if Juwan Howard's back, like, I you got to win me over. You 100% have to win me over. Like I was saying that at the beginning of this year, like talking myself into it, like trying to get me in. But like similar to the Pistons, man, like these teams have good players, but are just led by inept coaches. And it makes the whole product just unwatchable.
Yep, I'm with you, brother. Let's talk about hockey, a far more watchable product. Exciting weekend. I want to hear you cook on this. I know that you were dialed in. Great sports weekend for you.
Yes. I mean, all my obscure ones, my passions of, you know, cycling and like women's
women's curling was big weekend. Women's
curling, one-eyed, dart throwing, a bunch of different stuff, some pickleball. No, man, hockey was electric this weekend. So I had a two-game stand against Minnesota to close the year. Michigan needed at least to get one win. They did so on Saturday night, backs against the wall with a backup goalie. Got a little dicey in the third period. You know, giving up five goals in the final frame doesn't usually bode well, not conducive to winning, especially in hockey. And it was stressful to the end, but Seamus Casey in overtime brought it home. He had an excellent bounce back game in the first game. He had two crucial penalties that really killed the team, had two goals in the follow-up, was named the third star of the week in the Big Ten. Michigan, most importantly, is up to number 13 in the pairwise. Projected cut line is looking to be the top 14. So pairwise, for the uninitiated, is the at-large determining system for the NCAA tournament. Only 16 teams get in. So you're looking to be inside the top 14 right now. Michigan, firmly at 13, have a quarterfinal matchup with Notre Dame at Yost this weekend. Best of three series. If they win that, they should be good to go for the tournament. Nothing else matters. But if they win that and win a semifinal game against either Minnesota, Michigan State, or Wisconsin, presumably, they will be locked, guaranteed in. If they lose the series to Notre Dame, it's going to be really tough to get in, especially with some action happening around them. So got to get it done this weekend, and then we can talk about future things going on after that. But if Michigan gets in the tournament as like a four seed, oh, that's a nightmare matchup for one of the ones. Like, you do not want to see Michigan in a one-game set, because that's when they're super dangerous, especially this team.
Well said, sir. Those games Friday and Saturday both tip at 7 Eastern time. Michigan on the year, 18-13-3. When it was decided Fantilli wasn't coming back, I'm trying to remember back on this podcast, this feels like right about where you had him, maybe slightly higher. There were some injuries this season. There were some guys that have missed some ice time that led into it, baby. Maybe being a little below where you were expecting, but doesn't this feel about right?
It does. And like this season was, I think, is very important because like it exposed some flaws that last year's team was able to cover up because of Fantilli that you weren't really able to see. So I thought they'd be a little bit better, but then losing Jackson Haylen, then losing Rucker McGroarty for a little bit, Ethan Edwards not debuting until the second half of the year. It took them a while, but like in the second half of the season, they've really found their stride. They're still up and down, a little too inconsistent. But when this team is playing its best hockey, man, they're as good as anybody in the country. The way Barzo's come along, Nerado's already on Inside Michigan Hockey last week or 2 weeks ago was talking about he already knows which seniors are coming back. He's eyeing it. He has these monster recruiting classes lined up. Like, everything is trending in the right direction. And with Nerado, I really appreciate that he's growing as a head coach as he's going. He's not making the same mistake twice. He's identifying something. He's racing it. He's moving forward with something better. So trending in the right direction. A lot of hope for next year. It'll be interesting to see which players return and which ones go to the NHL, though, because there are quite a few that were drafted in the top two rounds.
Yeah, I agree with your earlier point, too, where it's polar opposite of this Michigan basketball team, which isn't even going to sniff the tournament. But like this hockey team is the type of team where it's like, yeah, they could go on a run. Yeah. You just get them in. And yeah, watch out, because they've got what it takes night in and night out. And the Big Ten tournament, I mean, obviously these Notre Dame games are huge. You anticipate wins or at least splits on these?
It's going to be a three games max. So I anticipate Michigan winning 2-1 or 2-0. They won the last series. We swept them 2 weeks ago at home. It was their season finale. But Michigan matches up well. I mean, Notre Dame has been a problem for us in recent history, but this season, like, we've been really able to get up and down on them. We have a good number on Bischel, one of the top goaltenders in the Big Ten. But I like the matchup for them with what they're doing here and where they're at in the season. After that, like, Michigan's not the best team in the Big Ten. Like, they're just not. But like on a given night, and that's what playoff and postseason hockey is all about, from the semifinals of the conference tournament through the NCAA tournament, And that's what makes it so exciting and also terrifying.
Yeah, 100%. And somebody gets hot as a goal scorer or a goalkeeper gets hot, things can really shift. So that'll be fascinating. I will try to. I can't watch because I'm down in South America, but I can follow along, which I will be doing. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, you were dialed into the combine. I was dialed into the combine. Draft talk is in full force right now. We're going to kind of talk about what we saw at the combine, who's coming up, who's rising, who's falling, some fits that we maybe haven't talked about before, and some superlatives. We'll be back right after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right, we are back. We are righteous men. It is time to talk about the draft combine. The draft itself will happen in April in the great state of Michigan. Wish I could be there for that. Definitely would be something that I would be attending. Are you going to maybe consider making a trip up? Or what about spring game? Trip up for that maybe?
It's tight this fall, man. Especially like with the, I had to miss last year. I was on a work trip for the spring game last year, but like the weather was
lemon,
so
it's
bad.
June. Lemon, it's March.
Yeah, exactly. The weather was so bad in that one. I was like, oh, okay, it's 15 and sleeting. I think I'll just listen to Jake Butt and Devin Gardner instead.
Yeah. When we went up to the spring game, it was quite nice. I mean, it was a little brisk, but yeah. No, I don't blame you, man. And the draft will be held indoors, at least. So there is that. But I mean, look, Detroit in the March, April, it's a mixed bag. It's hit or miss. I don't blame you on that one, but the combine itself, pretty electric. They allowed fans there for the first time, which I thought was a great addition. Why not? The NFL like continues to kind of get things right. I'm not the biggest Goodell guy, but like in general, you and I were talking off air about some of the other sports. They get it right more than they miss.
Yeah, they do have a big advantage with obviously being football, but like subtle things here and there. It's like, well, I guess he's keeping it between the lines and like letting fans in there. It's just fun. Like everyone loves football. Like, although this is like the underwear Olympics, like there's so much fun. The broadcast of it is so enjoyable with Rich Eisen and Daniel Jeremiah giving just really great insight. And of course, Rich Eisen talking about Michigan a lot, which, you know, I loved.
You and I are big Jeremiah Eisen guys. That's a really good duo right there. And you were telling me Klatt was involved with it at 1.2, so they had the triumvirate.
They're doing the whole NFL draft together. So we get those guys for 3 days together.
I'm in. I can't wait for that. Yeah, add Lewis Riddick, and that is like everything I need for my draft analyst. Those guys know what they're talking about. And I'm sure we'll hear from Kuiper and McShay, who I love as well. Look, NFL draft, nothing else compares. Like, it's an event. I've always loved it. I remember being like 12 and tuning in for NFL draft. So I love this stuff. It's the perfect fusion of college football and NFL. I think you and I both like kind of feel in our element a little bit because we watch so much college football that we can actually participate in this conversation. So let's talk about this a little bit. Michigan had 18 participants in the combine, setting the record. No big deal. Just national champions breaking records. Doesn't appear like we're going to like have some crazy run of guys in the first round necessarily, but I think we're both anticipating quite a few draft picks. So let's start with, who do you think helped their draft stock the most?
So I looked at all the Michigan participants, and I had five guys that really, I thought, just took a big step forward. Like, I have some other guys that were a net positive for being there. But when I look at the big winners of Michigan guys, I think of these five. And we'll take them one at a time, and I'm sure you and I are going to share a lot of the same ones. Let's just go ahead and start with the obvious one. He's going to be the first Wolverine drafted, and that's J.J. McCarthy. One of the biggest things was he weighed in at 219 pounds. Whew! That was what he needed to do. He was a little taller than everyone anticipated. He weighed a little bit more than everybody anticipated. Caleb Williams, Drake May, and Jaden Daniels, none of them threw. Jaden Daniels didn't even weigh in. Caleb Williams didn't do his medicals. Like a very weird select group of who was doing what. But I thought JJ looked good. He self-corrected on his throws. He was missing some to his left. There were some inconsistencies, but he had some good footwork. He had nice velocity, nice pop on the ball, nice touch. Again, it helps that he's only 21. The fact that he's not even going to be into his 30s when he's on his ending his second contract is such an appeal. And yeah, man, I thought it was a big win for him.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I don't know how you could possibly push back on this. That Jaden Daniels not throwing and not really participating, I don't know what he was thinking there. Maybe he doesn't have belief in himself, but he was kind of projected as the third quarterback off the board. Early on, it was looking like maybe McCarthy could even be the sixth quarterback off the board, like in some mock drafts that were made by people without full brain activity. You and I obviously never quite bought that, but that is not going to be the case now. I have even heard that he is potentially in the mix for second quarterback off the board ahead of Drake May. So I think he has moved ahead of Jaden Daniels. So while he maybe didn't move up as many overall positions as some of these other guys we're going to talk about, because I don't think he was falling past 15, even 12 is kind of where I had seen him as his floor. The amount of money he made and the significance of his jump, I think, is the biggest. So I think this is a great place to start. And now the question is, how high does he go? Does someone move up the board to get him? I posted on what used to be Twitter, a functioning website that actually had some importance and is now, I believe, just the scribblings of a drunk man on the inside of a bathroom stall. But I really think someone's going to move up to get him. I feel even more confident about that right now. I think someone's moving up the board for JJ. You mentioned his age, the measurables, the leadership, the winning pedigree, second highest velocity on the day behind a former Michigan quarterback, Joe Milton, at 61 miles per hour. I don't know what box he doesn't check. Missed a couple throws going out to the sidelines there, to the far hashes. Something we saw at Michigan, but he always corrected and he always was there when you needed it. His, 73% completion on third downs. Like, I think that people are going to buy into it. They are already buying into it. I'm hearing nothing but positive hype. Yeah, I think he was the big winner on the day.
Seems to really be just a lot of people are circling him into the Broncos. That seems to be, especially with the Russell Wilson move coming this week. I've also seen Minnesota. I kind of give him the googly eyes with what Kevin O'Connell could do with him there if they move on from Kirk Cousins. Even if they bring Kirk Cousins back, they could allow JJ to sit and do that. What stood out to me is I'm trying to find it. Was you see JJ McCarthy's three-cone drill?
Yes, I did. I mean, Michigan across the board had some good three-cone drills. Just like didn't blow you away with 40 times, but some good three-cones, some good shuttles, and absolutely crushed it as far as interviews.
JJ was the sixth fastest in the three cone drill, not of quarterbacks, of everybody participating.
Yeah, that's huge, man.
He was fast. I mean, he tied Corum. He was faster than a lot of corners. He was faster than Roma Dunze. Like a lot, just a big performance from him. And I was impressed. Like it just matters like where he's going to go in the top 15, because I think there's no chance in hell he slides below 15. No way.
No, 0% chance. And yeah, what that three cone drill kind of correlates to is escapability out of the pocket. You know, that ability to not just move up in the pocket, but like get out of the pocket, escape like Mahomes, or, you know, do some very interesting things. And I mean, his 40 time as well gets under the what is he at? 4.55?
He didn't run it. He didn't run.
Oh, he didn't run. Okay. Yeah. I'm looking at,
but it's projected, but it's rumored to be around 4.5. So
yeah. He's quick. So, I mean, we've seen that plenty of times. So, also hear that the New York Giants are really, really interested and are not afraid to move up in this. So I would love him in New York. I would love him in Denver. Obviously, for personal reasons, wouldn't love him in Minnesota. Two other ones I wanted to throw out there, because obviously this is a guy that we just want nothing but the best for. Stable franchises in need of a quarterback. New England, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's one we haven't talked about. Like, I don't like the Steelers necessarily, but you want to talk about a stable franchise. It doesn't really get much more stable than that.
No, it does. Some of the offensive line issues worry me.
Sure, that's a good point.
I like where your head's at. It's like they have definitely more weapons than the New England does now. The Falcons were one that he was kind of rumored to as well. And I do like the idea of like Bijan Robinson and Kyle Pitts and Drake London out there. There's some weapons out there, a good defense. So certain things like that are a little bit enticing. But yeah, man, there's a lot of teams. I mean, almost every team needs a good quarterback. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, there's a lot of teams that could talk themselves in, but I think you're in the right place where I think someone's going to trade up and do something like in the moment to get him.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's going to sit around and wait for the Vikings to just grab him. That's what I'm saying at this point. So, all right. Moving on from that, who else do you think maybe besides McCarthy, who's next on your help their draft stock the most?
Another one I'll go in on is Blake Corum. Corum ran 4.53 in the 40. I thought was excellent. He led all running backs with his bench with 27 reps, which is nuts. But the thing that really stood out to me was his on the field work, because they had an awesome side by side with our GPS tracking and everything.
Thank you.
Right next to Marshawn Lloyd. And he is like, Marshawn Lloyd blew him away in the 40, but like in the drills, making the cuts and the lateral quickness, Corum is like two strides ahead easily in just 10 yards. So I thought he made himself a lot of money there. I still think he'll probably fall in like the RB3 or 4 range for one reason or another. But as good as he showed himself in pass catching and what he could do on the field, speed, strength, easily my running back too on this. I'm heavily biased, but I thought it was an outstanding showing from Corum.
It was. I don't know how much he moved up, because everything I saw from Corum, I fully expected. Like nothing about that, you know, was anything that you and I like, okay, 4.55, that seems about right. Never really had that crazy breakaway speed. What is he really good at? Jump cuts? Nothing surprising there. Like, I'm pretty sure that I have jump cut tattooed on my neck right now after that last season. Like, yeah, that's what he does. And then his strength, workout warrior. I mean, his legs are thicker than most oak trees. So like, wasn't surprised with that. And then the bench press, you know, it just goes to like show just how much this guy's in the gym. And thank you, Ben Herbert, for what you did there. But yeah, I'm with you. This guy, and also like, again, something that I'm going to keep bringing up here, every Michigan guy just aced the interview parts of this.
Yes.
And you know, you've got that leadership aspect. I don't know how high he will go, but he's not falling behind. What do you think? The fourth round is maybe the floor? Fifth round is the floor? Just because he's a running back?
I would say, I think he's going to go firmly in day two. I think round two or three. I think they're, because the way the running back position has been devalued, there's always like a run in round three where two go in a row, and then everyone's like, get my pick and get my running back. So I think he's going to fall somewhere in the day two, day three range. If he goes to day four or day three and goes into round four, I would be surprised, but firmly expect him in day two. And the teams he has been linked to a lot recently are the Chargers, which obviously, obviously we're so in on that, and the Eagles, like with what they're doing there on offensive line. Like, I like that a lot too.
That's fun. All right. I'll throw one in there. I think this guy maybe made himself more money than, or I think this guy jumped up more spots in the draft than either of the two guys we dropped. Maybe not made more money. That's JJ. JJ jumping from 15 to 4 would be a lot of money made. But Mikey Sainristil still, I think, made a huge jump, potentially a round or two higher than he might have gone, because, you know, still measured in at 5'9", which we kind of expected, but ran a 4.47, had a 40-inch vert, and caught everything. Looked so fluid in these drills. Like, looked like he invented these drills. Like, nobody looked more at home. And then you also get some of the snippets. I mean, I'm going to have to adjust britches here real quick, from Jalen McMillan talking about nobody pissed him off more than Mikey Sainristil, because he was calling out routes. He was calling out formations. He was just 2-3 steps ahead of everybody else. Again, not surprising. We were watching all of this happen, but hearing it at the combine and hearing how brilliant he is, everyone talking about his tackling ability, that he's ready to play right now, his leadership ability, it all translates. He could be a day two guy now. I think he is a day two guy now.
I think so too, man. He had all the intangibles checked. You could see it in the games, but I think the athleticism and everything on the field, they wanted to see that in the testing. Like, let's see what you can do jumping, let's see you do running. nailed everything. And Daniel Jeremiah brought up that two Michigan Wolverines above everybody else were mentioned the most in the interviews. And unsurprisingly, it was Mikey Sainristil and Blake Corum. And you're just going to add them to a room. And one of the teams we talked about just a few minutes ago is one of the teams he's the most linked to, and it's the Steelers. And it's like adding somebody like Mike, he just seems like the perfect kind of veteran, mature Steeler defender we grew up with, like the Troy Polamalu's, the Porters, James Harrison's, people like that.
Yeah. What I like to do around this time is to look at other fan websites and hear what they're saying, the prospects they want. And Steelers were on there. Steelers want him. The Packers fans want him. Packers fans are interested. And I have a lot of Packers fans. I have a lot of Steelers fans in my life too, to be honest. So those are names, obviously Seattle Chargers, the Lions, man, that would be a fun one. It's not like a huge need. I don't think that they would reach in round two, but if he happens to make it to round three, oh, that's fun. But yeah, I think the Steelers aren't letting him get past round two, personally.
I think it's, like with Corum, I think it's firmly day two. And that's where you're going to see a lot of these Wolverines drafted, I believe. I think the majority is like to be in the day two range. Another one for me that made some money, just kind of solidified some things, was Chris Jenkins. 29 reps in the bench to lead, second in the D tackles, one of the most in the combine, third most athletic D tackle by all of the measurables there. Chris Long on his podcast thinks he's very versatile, can do a lot of things in a 3-4 and a 4-3, which would be very appealing to anybody because he can immediately step in and provide usage, whether it's as a starter, as a rotational player. He's getting a lot of buzz from a lot of teams, and it looks like Buffalo and Seattle are two of the most, and again, right there in the day two of the round two, round three range for him.
So kind of oddly, I actually had Jenkins as a guy that maybe fell slightly and maybe falls by a little bit here, and not because he didn't show out. Some of the other defensive tackles had some crazy days. That was all this was. I think he showed exactly what we were hoping for. Had a 4.9 40, so under five. That's great. That's what you want to see there. Didn't quite blow it out of the water for the mutant, as far as remember who was it? It was Mozzie, right? That was the freak that came to the combine and blew everything up and came and, I mean, what did he, 15 overall? I mean, he really
25, I think, 25.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm off there. But, I mean, flew up the draft boards. We thought maybe a day two guy. I don't think Jenkins had that kind of a performance where all of a sudden he's going number 25. I think some other guys moved ahead of him. And this is not a knock on Jenkins. He had a great day. I think he's, again, like a lot of these guys, firmly in that day two range. Another team, again, I'm looking around at message boards. How about the Panthers? His dad played there. Yep. They're interested in him. They like that idea, and everybody could use this guy. And something that I mentioned to you off air, this Michigan DNA is everywhere now on these defenses. I mean, you've got, was it five teams with Michigan DNA on them? You got Baltimore, you got Seattle, you got the Chargers. You've got, I mean, it's all over the place. So four teams probably in total. There's one that I'm missing there, but regardless, a guy like Jenkins is going to fit in a lot of places. He's extremely scheme versatile, and particularly for those that are running the Raven shape-shifting type defense, I think he's a great fit in a lot of places.
Yeah, I think he's going to do a lot. He got overshadowed by people like Braden Fisk, who tested really well from Florida State. But Braden Fisk is really small and struggles against the run. So it's like you're going to show out in athleticism when you weigh 30 pounds less. And a lot of guys like that, this is kind of like people like Xavier Worthy, which is, it's awesome. He broke the record. He ran 4.21, which is exceedingly fast. He weighs 165 pounds. The guy's record he broke, John Ross, did absolutely nothing in the NFL. Sometimes the combine heroes overshadow some of the guys that are going to do things. I think you saw that at Edge too. I like Latu a lot from UCLA, but you come away from this talking about, Chop Robinson, Dallas Turner, who are still good first round players, but can give you the paralysis by analysis, if you will.
Yeah, I'm with you. While I was trying to figure out what we're calling this Baltimore Ravens defense right now, because it started out as the Tampa 2 and is merged into you can't call it the Tampa 2 anymore. Yeah. It's so far away from that. A very interesting thing. Here is a statistic of what the Baltimore Ravens ran coverage wise against certain teams. Against the Colts, they ran 40% cover one. Against the Texans, they ran 25% cover six. So like, just to give you an idea of the gamut that it stretches of what Baltimore's running and just how versatile they want. And like that, that speaks to the type of player they want. They want to be able to run everything and they don't want to have to be running in a million different guys on and off the field. So a guy like Jenkins, I think is going to be extremely scheme versatile. He's getting drafted. Lions second round is fun there too. So I'm going to throw Lions in there for him.
They do a lot there. God, I love cover six. Split coverage, two and four on each side. Woo! It's hard to diagnose.
I'm with you. Let me throw one at you. I think probably on your list. And this was my most surprising riser of the day. Cornelius Johnson is
last
my
one.
Biggest surprise. I figured we had the same top five here. Love that we don't share the document when this happens naturally. Yeah, it's like the Northern Lights. Cornelius Johnson, man, we loved. The apology tour's over now. I mean, it lasted for like 18 months. He's firmly where he belongs in Michigan lore. A little bit of a disappointing season, but not because like he wasn't producing. I was just very surprised with how athletic he scored. Now, he scored an unofficial 9.90 on the RAS score out of a possible 10. If you don't know what that is, no one's going to fault you for it. This is yet another one of these new ranking systems, but it's basically just respective athlete score. So it's not super complex. It's just combining all of their stats from the combine. But of this score, he would be 32 out of 3,603 wide receivers ranked from 1987 to 2024. That seems high for Cornelius Johnson.
It makes a lot of sense, man. Like, he's one of those guys. He has the frame. He has the speed. He has a lot of tools. And it's like, okay, can get the hands a little bit more consistent. It wouldn't surprise me to see him have, like, a good career or even a better career than he did in college.
Yeah. I mean, we need to, at this point, create our own index, the Lannister index for athletic greatness, like something. Like, we just need something out there. Because, look, these things are just popping up out of nowhere. I'm like, his RAS score? What the hell is that? But extremely athletic testing from Cornelius Johnson. And I saw some people saying, like, man, why didn't we see more? We underutilized this guy. No. No, we did not. We did not.
15-0. What a national championship.
It's like, oh my God, we should have been like, what are you talking about? Like, we threw at Cornelius Johnson a lot, and like sometimes it just didn't work out that great. I don't know that like we underutilized him or misused him or anything. It just might be that he has another gear to get to.
Yeah, he had a good Big Ten championship, if I recall. I'm just off the top of my head. What were his numbers in that game?
Which one?
Big Ten. Oh, well played by you. Most recent Big Ten champion. Yeah, he had 9 catches, 64 yards, like solid performance. Just good, reliable type of weapon. I mean, good for him for showing out, putting on for the chess team at Michigan.
I'm with you, brother. All right, let's flip to the other side of it. I already mentioned one that I thought maybe fell a couple spots in Jenkins, but this is a minor drop. Anybody that had like a major drop in your mind?
I'll do my also participated. Then I'm going to end on the guys that are still a net positive just to keep it optimistic.
Sure.
Also participated, Trente Jones, Josh Wallace, Drake Nugent, Ladarius Henderson, all just underwhelming, I think is the word I'm going to say. I'm not going to go straight to disappointing, just a little underwhelming. Like I thought that we'd see some more and maybe some of the athleticism stuff from Trente or the strength stuff, something from Josh Wallace. Didn't participate in everything, but just thought I'd get a little bit more from those guys.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. Roman Wilson seemed disappointed in his 4.41 40.
4.39 official.
4.39 official. Oh, okay.
He was still mad.
And he was still mad at that. I don't know why. I mean, under 4.4. I mean, maybe that's outdated because people are running 4.1s now and it's just madness out there. But I thought that that was a good showing for Roman. I don't think that he fell. I think maybe some other guys moved ahead of him. So maybe similar to what I said to Jenkins earlier, he falls because Xavier Worthy rises kind of thing.
He could, but he's still in my net positive range. Like my net positive guys, Roman was 4.39, but he looks so fluid in the pass catching drills. And I'm not as worried about the 40. Like Keon Coleman was catching a lot of flack for running in the 4.6s. And obviously that's, you know, you're like, oh, 4.6 is kind of alarming. But then he had the fastest time running through the gauntlet. And similar to a player last year who was in the 4.6s and then led all receivers in the gauntlet in Puka Nacua. Like, ooh, 40 does not directly translate. Like, this is, it's not the bit end all be all. I thought Roman looked really fluid in his routes. His game speed is so much faster. He's so much more controlled. I can, oh, what did I call him to? I have a draft profile coming out on him tomorrow. I called him a Fight Club Tyler Lockett, or Tyler Lockett if he wasn't so committed to celibacy.
This is why you're the GOAT.
So, like, he was one, like, I thought, you know, again, did well. Other net positive guys, AJ Barner, I thought showed you everything he was going to be. Jalen Harrell, 37-inch vert. My God, like, that is great for the next level. You really want to see that from your edges. And then the two offensive linemen who are not even sneaky athletic anymore, just flat-out athletes in Carson Barnhart and Trevor Keegan.
Yeah, Barnhart was the guy that we didn't mention that I wanted to mention as far as the raw athletic score, the RAS, baby. Extremely high from Barnhart, which is a little surprising because, like, I don't know, you don't look at Carson Barnhart and be like, pure athlete. You're like, oh, yeah, that guy smokes Newports at a bowling alley and he once bowled a 280. Like, that's what I think of when I look at Carson Barnhart. But he probably made himself some money, I think. I mean, I really do think he probably moved up, and I don't know what his floor is or his ceiling is, but these offensive linemen, man, and I'm going to keep going back to the interviews and the testing and what we're hearing. I forget who it was. It might have been Jeremiah said that he's hearing that these Michigan guys are 2 years ahead of most of the other prospects. And he was saying that about the guys that weren't even like the super seniors. So I imagine Barnhart's one of those guys, as our offensive line has just been so far ahead of everybody else. The intelligence, what these guys got going on between the ears. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see where these offensive linemen go. And I think Barnhart could be one of those guys where it's like a little Runyon-esque, where it's like, okay, yeah, good pick. And then it's like, oh, Barnhart or Onwenu, where we were like, we liked Onwenu. Then they got him and they're like, oh, snap. Like, this guy's a starter.
Absolutely. And especially with his positional versatility, playing up and down the line of scrimmage, he is going to find somewhere and he is going to stick for sure, man. Guys that didn't like fully test, they were there and, you know, in capacity, and Zach Zinter, Junior Colson, Michael Barrett, Braden McGregor, like, good players. Like, I think I did them in the right order, which perhaps they could be drafted. Colson might be the top of those four, because I think if he participates at the Michigan Pro Day, I think he is going to fly up some boards. I've already seen him flying up boards just from the hearsay. I've seen a lot of people have him in the top 40 players in the draft. Could be one of the top two linebackers taken. So although they weren't going to be making the headlines because of the participation, like, still guys to keep an eye on.
Well, I mean, it also came out this weekend, the quote from Junior Colson from Michael Barrett, where he came up to him and said, I broke my hand on that last play. And he's like, oh, for real? Do you want to go out? And he's like, nah, let's finish the drive.
And also gave the story of, oh yeah, both my parents died in the earthquake in Haiti, so there's nothing I can't handle. Like, yeah, that's what I never knew the full story. When he was seven, that's when the earthquake struck Haiti. His entire family died, and then he was adopted by a family in Tennessee. And that's how then he came to Michigan. That's what he's been through.
Put that man in the top five.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, I heard that story because I knew he and Mikey are both have Haitian roots, and I knew he was there a little bit longer, but I never knew the entire story of the adoption process. And then he spoke to that and was like, yeah, there's nothing I can't handle. I'm like, you know what, Junior, you were damn right. Like, that's why you play with a broken arm, broken face, broken legs, like, whatever it is, man. So super excited for him to hear his name called.
Oh my God. Yeah. Colson always been one of my guys, like, might be one of the guys that just continues to rise on my list of all timers. Love that. Love that. Any pairings that you're hearing about? We mentioned a couple of them. JJ to the Giants, Mikey Sainristil still to either the Steelers or the Packers. Anything else maybe you're hearing about that could be a fit, or any fits that maybe you thought of watching this?
Oh man, I love if like Colson and like Corum could end up at the Chargers together to keep it to Harbaugh. Like, that would be awesome. Or if you had like Sainristil and Chris Jenkins end up at the Lions, you could see it that way. None I'm hearing of right now, but you and I talk every year, like, there's always a surprise, and we always like, you know, just having a friend to go to a new city with and check things out, someone you know and you're familiar with. So nothing I've heard yet, but have you heard anything?
No, just those ones that I mentioned. I think a little bit more of that'll keep coming out. Obviously, the ones to watch are Baltimore, Seattle, and the Chargers, just because of the Michigan connections with all these guys that are out there. How many Wolverines do you think are drafted in the draft proper?
I would say
We can go through it real quick. Let's go. JJ, one. Next one off the board. Jenkins or Sainer still?
No, it's probably Roman or Junior, I would think.
Roman or Colson next off the board. Okay, so there's three.
And then Corum Jenkins.
Corum Jenkins, there's five. Jenkins. Barnhart, six. Barner, seven.
Zinter.
Zinter, eight. Yeah, Zinter not participating in all this, obviously. But
Jalen Harrell, nine. Drafted.
There's nine with Harrell. Yep, I agree with you there.
Did we say Keegan?
There's 10.
Wallace? I think we get 15 drafted. Actually, 14. I think we get 14 drafted. I think the ones we don't see drafted are, I don't know if we're going to see Trent Jones drafted just because of we didn't have the combine there. It's easier to count the ones that aren't going to be drafted. I don't think we're going to see Trent drafted. Barnhart's a tweener right now. I don't know if we're going to see Nugent drafted. I don't know if we're going to see McGregor drafted. So those three, but I mean, I don't think James Turner gets drafted, but he wasn't at the combine. So those three for sure. Then maybe like Barnhart, Wallace, Johnson are the guys that are kind of like in the day three range. And I think it's going to see where the chips fall. Honestly, at that point, you don't want to be drafted. That way you can kind of pick your destination, have some more flexibility.
That's true. But with Barnhart's rise with that athleticism,
I agree. Like,
he checks some boxes that folks really look for. And like you look at a winning record and what they produced on the ground, I think Barnhart does get drafted personally.
I like that. I would say for the ones it sounds crappy to say, the ones I'm most confident not getting drafted would be Trente.
McGregor for me.
And McGregor. Those would be the two I'm really the most. I think Wallace gets drafted. I think Michael Barrett will get drafted just because of the production, the leadership, everything else he brings. And I think Wallace has the frame and at least the one high level year to really like woo some teams in. But yeah, I mean, there's a realm where they do get 18 drafted though, and it's not very far off, which is insane.
Crazy, man. Absolutely insane. Ah, it's going to be fun. Can't wait to talk about it more. What do we got coming up? Oh, I can tell you what we got coming up. I discovered the auction. We've been a draft podcast for most of our existence, and I love a draft. We got a lot of drafts coming up. We've got auctions coming up. This is the new thing. I can't wait. We're going to start auctioning some stuff off. We're going to talk a lot about incoming freshmen. We're going to talk a lot about the quarterback position at Michigan. We are going to talk a lot about the spring game moving forward. We are going to talk very little about Michigan basketball, Michigan hockey hitting its crux right now. So we are back now. The break is over. I will be broadcasting from abroad, but we're back here with you. So tune in. Make sure that you like, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever. Andy, anything else from you before I close it?
No, sir.
I'm Jared. That's Andy. This is Out of the Blue. We'd like to remind you that wherever you go, go blue.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.